This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Welcome to the Underground. Cool. Thanks for coming out. All right, I got a real treat for you guys tonight, and we're going to be joined tonight by local therapist Deli Dickinson. You want to come up, Deli? Come on up. Yeah. Wow, this place is like out of control. Cool. Who wants to volunteer to hand these exercises out? Thanks, Felicia. This says the button on it. It's actually a Genesis tool. For any Genesis fans tonight, you know, I'm a Genesis fan. Anyone that's been through it? Yeah. Cool. This is one of the tools in the Genesis process. We're going to pick on it tonight. It's going to be fun. Let's go ahead and open in prayer. Father, thank you for this gathering tonight. We gather just with this wonderful understanding that we're loved by you, and you are our Father. And we get to be your children. We get to practice being the sons and daughters of God. We get to go after it. We get to work out what's been put into us. And I just thank you for that. And help us to be able to concentrate tonight and help us all, like, bring something home tonight. And make us more like your Son. In Jesus' name, amen. Cool. Last week I talked a little bit about how God takes our future self, puts it in our now self, and then we can be fearless in pursuing future self because it's really who we are. Pretty cool, right? That's really cool. I can't believe I said that like that without messing it up. All right, so I got this bell. I wonder what you think of when you hear this, right? This little bell. Wow. Food. Did a little study, and you guys can look it up. A lot of you guys have heard of a psychologist named Ivan Pavlov, right? Had a dog, Pavlov's dog. What he ultimately ended up doing was he was studying the saliva in dogs and their response to different stimuli and stuff. Basically, the idea is that he would ring a bell, and then he would feed the dog. And then at some point, he would ring the bell, and then he would feed the dog. He had this tube that came out of the dog's mouth, and he would measure the saliva. And then, as most of you know, what ended up happening is he could just ring the bell, and the dog would just have saliva, like, pouring out without anything else happening, like no food, no anything. And just the sound of the bell would get this huge response from the dog. Pretty basic stuff, but really, really wonderful foundational stuff because, you know, when you really think about it, what does food have to do with a bell? Like, really, nothing. Really has nothing to do with it. But he developed this connection, and the dog felt like there was a powerful connection. So, listening to a story this week, a lady said that when she was growing up, whenever she was sad, lonely, afraid, her mom would come into the kitchen and would bake cookies. And then they would sit down together and eat them, right? So when you know it, whenever she's sad, lonely, afraid, what do you think that bell rings? Like, what do you think that means? Time to open the fridge and start dragging out the pie, right? That kind of stuff. And you can see the connections, really powerful stuff. When you think about it, what does food have to do with loneliness, fear, sadness? You know, really nothing when you really think about it. But that's actually a deep connection. A lot of us probably think, yeah, there's a huge connection. One of the first things we learn is to soothe ourselves when we're little babies with food. When we're afraid, when we're lonely, when we're scared, we're hungry, we're feeling these feelings, and they give us a bottle, and then we learn comfort food. So that's a deep one. That's something we learn right away. Listening to a guy talk this week who said that his father was really, really critical of him, including his mom. They wanted him to be a high performer. So everything he did, there was like a lot of criticism around it. Couldn't do anything right. Real intense. But what he found out was when he got married, met this beautiful woman, they get married, they're, you know, developing their household together and all this. But every time his wife would say something that was maybe constructive, he would blow his stack, right? I mean, he would just way out of proportion, attack. And so what do you think is going on there? You know, this caused him a lot of pain and his relationship with his wife. This really ended up affecting this guy's relationship with his boss, definitely his job. People where he was trying to, you know, get involved in teamwork with any group of people. You know, how important is it for us to be able to really pick apart things each other's doing, improve on it? If you can't hear that, you know, that's going to be really tough. It's going to be painful. These buttons and these triggers are so powerful, guys. When we're triggered, our buttons pushed. These responses are so powerful, it will cause us to actually ignore like obvious truth and information that's right there and react just huge to these heart reactions, these wounds we carry. And it can involve just a look on someone's face. I mean, my daughter's here. You can ask her. She used to just roll her eyes at me when I'd say something to her, and it would escalate to me like kicking doors off their hinges. Like, really? Right? Like that kind of reaction out of someone just going, rolling their eyes at you. The horrible stuff that went down when a face that looked like rejection or that looked like, you know, I'm an idiot or something, and the reaction that would come out of me, super painful stuff. It was painful for me too, you know. I didn't want to act like that. So the way we experience this is the thing happens to us, and there's our reaction. This is the way we experience it. Someone says something to us, there's our reaction. That's how it feels. The eye roll, there's my reaction. Boom. All right? That's how we feel like it happens to us. And that response that you see on the other side of this, these hands hitting, is some form of fight, flight, or freeze. Because it's a survival response that's coming out. Like, I am personally feeling threatened. So I'm going to be fighting. Mine was fight. Some people walk away. Some people shut down. Some kind of survival response is going to come out of us. Now, it's so interesting because instead of me feeling my feelings, you know, what is happening within me when someone rolls their eyes at you, flips you off in traffic, criticizes you, instead of me actually discovering and feeling what's happening within me, our natural instant response is to attack the person that's making you feel that way, or you perceive as making you feel that way, or bringing it up, and you want them to stop. And you're demanding that it stop. I don't know how many of you relate to this, but when I was coming out of heavy duty addiction, it seemed like every word out of my mouth was, I'm being triggered. You know, I can't go there. There's all these people, and that triggers me, and can't do that. That has this involved, and that's going to trigger me, and I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to get triggered. And it was like this nightmare for me to walk out of my addiction because there was all these triggers, and I was demanding that everyone outside of me alter what they're doing and who they are, you know, to adjust to my own wounds and my own things that I'm associating with these triggers. Painful stuff. This is painful stuff. None of this is easy. So basically what I was saying is you either stop doing what you're doing or I'm going to fall apart emotionally. Or you either start doing what I'm demanding you start doing or I'm going to fall apart emotionally in some way. Tough stuff to live with. And these triggers or these buttons are a great opportunity for us to see what's going on within us. These are awesome. That when these are exposed, there's something there. Awesome. I want to heal that. I want to go after that. I want to follow that. So when we experience this, being triggered, right? Believe it or not, if you slow this bad boy down, right? There's a space. There's a beloved space between what happens and my reaction. Guys, there is a space. And oh, that precious space. The space between the eye roll and my attack, there is a space that's there for me, and man, in that space is my power is my wisdom, is my even my self-compassion, is my adult son of God self. And if I can get that space to be bigger and bigger, and I can stand in that space, guess what? I can live in a world of options. When the eye roll comes, there's more than one thing besides blow her out to the weeds, right? So all you see is her feet sticking up. There's actually space where I can go, let's see, how do I want to react? What do I want to do with this? Awesome stuff. That's powerful stuff. Because we live in a world, guys, if you haven't noticed, that's a triggering world. And the world's not going to slow down for me because I was a drug addict most of my life. It's not going to slow down. It's not going to stop. I live in a world that's triggering everywhere. So, okay, one more story. Listening to a lady who had worked through alcohol issues. A lot of work, a lot of pain, amazing journey. But her family didn't really respect the work she had done. Didn't really value and didn't really understand how hard it is to come out of something like alcoholism and that kind of stuff. And so she's at a family gathering and they're all deciding where they're going to go for a birthday party for one of the family members. And the dad, the lead person there, says, oh, I know, let's go down to Kodiak Jack's and we'll have the birthday party there. Yay, everybody agrees. Meeting closed. She's like, atomic bomb. Painful stuff. That's painful stuff. In that situation, who carries the power over her when she's sitting there and they're deciding, we're going to go to a bar to celebrate this person's birthday, and she just erupts with this anger. I don't know about you, but for me, from most of my life, I walked around with a shirt on that was covered with buttons with different faces and emotions on it. And people could just walk up and get whatever they decided. And it's like I had no arms. And I was at everyone's mercy and life's mercy of how I was going to feel. And I believe that as we walk as sons and daughters of God, loved by our Father, He would have us, in a sense, turn our shirt inside out, have our arms, and we can actually decide how we want to feel about things that happen to us. Like, that's the big picture. That's how it works. This is a thing I talk about some. I'm not going to talk huge about it. Rain, you might want to take that for a tool. This is slowing down, recognize and allow. I'm not attacking her for her rolling her eyes. I'm recognizing and allowing. And then I investigate, and then the N stands for nurture. Super important for us to be able to see this stuff, and I don't know how you guys experience this, but I'm more willing to admit certain things when I approach it in a certain way. Like my sister does some work with people that struggle with suicide, and if she walks up and says to someone, are you thinking of harming yourself in some way? A lot of times they don't want to respond to that. They don't trust that statement, and they don't really give a clear response. But if she says to them, is there part of you that's struggling with harming yourself? They'll say yes. There's a part of me that's hurt by the eye roll, and I need to recognize that part of me. What is that? So when we deal with ourselves as parts, we can have more compassion, and we're willing then, more willing to look at it. So being curious, investigating, and being a loving witness is so insanely powerful, guys. For the woman whose family wanted to go to a bar to celebrate a birthday, she learned to sit down in a chair and say, you know what? It hurts so bad when I am so unprotected by my family. It hurts so bad when I feel so unloved. It hurts so bad when I feel unnoticed by my family. And she sat in that feeling, and she was willing to stay there. And until the right moment, she knew she had hurt and validated these feelings and explored them and came towards them. Then she was able to begin nurturing and sharing truth with herself from a higher place. Does that make sense?
Stan?
Yeah.
So when you talk about investigate, you're talking about investigate your own feelings. You're going yes. inside yourself, not investigate the situation, right?
Correct.
Okay, not outward.
I'm getting curious. What's happening in here? What is this? So what we want is when we get triggered and these things happen, we want to be able to have options. That's kind of my goal when I'm working with people and when I'm working with myself. Wouldn't you know it that this week that I've been working on this, I got triggered this week, you know, and I had to deal with some stuff. That's fine. You know, I'm in. Let's do it, right? Painful stuff, though. It's painful work to sit. Instead of attacking the person that you feel like is triggering you, becoming an investigator and looking within, what's happening within me? You know, what is it about me? What's going on in here? And feeling those feelings. So, I want to have options, though. When I get triggered, I want to be able to say, what is the best response for me here? What does love look like? Okay, so we have two people coming up that are going to do the button exercise with us. So I'm really excited about doing this. So why don't we have Kevin and Marcy come on up. You guys want to give them a hand? This is going to be a little tricky for us because we're going to kind of walk through both of them at the same time doing the same exercise. But I just really want you guys to experience two different people doing this. And I do want to mention that this isn't just a live thing where we don't know what's going on. They have worked through these issues for the most part, and so they kind of know what's going on here. I want you guys to see how real stuff that they've already dealt with, you know, what it looks like with this exercise. So I know, Kevin, you're familiar with Genesis-type tools, right?
Yep.
All right, so I'm going to draw on this board two buttons. Here's a button. That'll be Kevin. All right. Are you happy with this button? Is that good?
I don't know.
And then we're going to go with Marcy. Here's her button, okay? All right. So, and I can't wait till Deli jumps in. This is going to be fun. So, I'm not going to go from the very top here just for time's sake. I'm going to drop down because the first five questions on this button exercise are kind of a warm-up, kind of getting you in the realm of buttondom. And we're already in the realm of buttondom, so we're going to just jump right into to number six. So we'll start with Kevin. Think of a typical situation that you overreact to.
Okay, with me, it's pretty much any type of criticism, so or something even that I could take as criticism. For example, last week, Glenna suggested, you know, maybe I could coil up the wires for the sound a little neater. And I took that as being a critical thing, even though she was just trying to be helpful. And so that kind of triggered my button to get pushed.
Okay, and so again, we're looking for patterns. You start off with what's typical, and then, you know, obviously you can keep this with you in everyday life and work through things as they happen. Eventually it won't be so typical. But anyway, we're going to go after typical first, you know, in this. So he's saying that when he perceives criticism, even though he knows it's constructive and it's a team effort, his heart tells him it's something else. Is that right?
Exactly.
Okay. How about you, Marcy?
Okay, so my button is, this is going to sound really silly, but my button is feeling like I have to do the dishes. Just totally makes me feel trapped, like someone's making me do something, and my reaction varies from just crazy anger at the person to like just when I slam the dishes around, splash water everywhere, just almost like a two-year-old. It's pathetic.
Cool. Everybody pretty clear about that? That's a good answer. And if something doesn't make sense, like, why would that trigger you? Hold on, because it's going to make sense. You can know that, right? It's going to make sense. Okay. So now seven says, What are the streaming thoughts that go through your mind during the situation, Kevin? Like if it was a marquee and thoughts are going by, what are those?
Things like, what do you know about this? I'm smarter about this. I know more about this. This is my bailiwick. I should be in charge of this. You have no authority on this.
Okay, you see that automatic attack? Instead of feeling it, that's what we go to, is a protective response. He's trying to protect himself, and that's a form of attack, right? So, you know, obviously the idea is going to be to slow this thing down, but so the streaming thoughts are, you know, like, who are you? I know more about this, right? And you're going into this. So if we had to name this button, it would be pretty simple. What would you guys name that button? You know, anybody have any suggestions of what you would put on this button for a name? Incompetent, that's a good one. What would you write on here? If you were working with Kevin and he's telling you, when I perceive, you know, people suggest things and they try to adjust what I'm doing, I perceive it a certain way. I wonder what you would write on this button if you were working with him. Say, when this is pushed, response, right? So what did you end up writing on this button for yourself?
Criticism.
Okay. Let's see, I'm going to write critics, because right now I can't think of how to spell criticism. I can spell things differently really fast, like that. All right, so sometimes when I'm doing this with people, I try to see, is there something under that, or is there something, is that the best name? And I believe that's just a great, straightforward name. I think that's fair. You know, if we're both happy with what we write on there, we go with it, you know? So what are the streaming thoughts that go through your mind when someone says, you got to do the dishes?
Anywhere from, oh, I can't stand you, to, well, it wasn't a good meal anyways. We could have just not eaten. Totally. Wow. Just any number of things. All the stuff is baked on, even if it's not really. This is going to take forever, even if it doesn't. Or sometimes it does. All kinds of things.
Cool. All right, so let's name this thing. If you can name it, man, you are right there, guys. This is the toughest part sometimes, is like getting a name on that thing. And we work at this really hard. Sometimes we have to circle around. And if you're working with someone with this exercise, to me, and we can't seem to name it, we just keep asking questions. And we stay after it. We don't lose heart. We back up and we keep coming at it. And sooner or later, like, we're trusting God to show us, like, bam, it'll happen. And it's real exciting. What would you name this?
So after we did discuss it, we came up with Trapped.
Okay. And that took some time, didn't it?
It did. It took quite a bit of time, actually.
I think there was a bead of sweat coming down my bald head when we were talking about this earlier. All right, Trapped. Now you guys see, it started with dishes, right? Dishes, how would that make you feel triggered? Aha! Now we're going, well, this is starting to make sense, right? Okay, and a comment about cords might not make sense, but critics, criticism, that makes a lot of sense to us, right? Okay. So, here we go. We're going to cover this with a little protective cover. You know how the president has that red button? And he has all those, hopefully, he has a bunch of protection around it. Doesn't accidentally lean on it with his elbow. Oops, I just nuked somebody, right? There's all these protections around it. If you have a button, and you know it's a button, you know, we have all these protections to keep it from being pushed. Kevin, how do you keep this button being criticized from being pushed?
So, like, one of my chief ways of doing it is, like, to work alone. So any task, I try to set that up to where I'm the only person working on that task, and then it can be all done. And then it's a done deal, and then at that point, nobody can really criticize me because it's done. But if, like, in the middle of the task, they say something, then, you know, that opens me up. So,
right.
So I've over the years built all these walls around how I do things.
Complete it. Anything else?
That's kind of the main one. Sometimes, like, I'll recognize I'm being triggered, and I'll just, like, freeze up or kind of just go in the background. It's not always, like, anger, but the trigger can still be there.
Okay. Okay, Marcy, how do you keep this being trapped?
Well, that's kind of a tricky one, because sometimes, I mean, you don't have an option. You just ate dinner, and there you go. But sometimes I've actually, like, just, we have a big family and we all eat together, and I'll, like, be at work and I'll just be like, okay, I'm not going to eat with you guys tonight. I'm going to get dinner somewhere else.
Not eat? So avoid the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll move forward from here. Okay, so we recognize that the person triggering us isn't the one that installed it. So what I like to do here now is I like to draw these little wires, you know, and they're installed, right? So obviously my wife's not the one that installed that button, right? So that's the next question here is, when was this installed?
With me, it was when I was a child. My parents were, you know, really perfectionist, really adamant that I get good grades, you know, that I'd be, you know, kind of perfect. I had to study for a couple extra hours after school, after my homework was done, and, you know, they were just really focused, you know, to, you know, make me be the best I could be, but maybe off to extremes. And so, you know, I kind of rebelled against that.
Makes a lot of sense. Okay, here we go, guys. Here's the big reveal.
So I really like what Stane was saying earlier about, like, you look at it and you're like, this reaction is so not in proportion to what the situation is. And I would really hate that I would just, like, lose it when I had to do the dishes. And so I honestly just started praying and asking God, like, please help me. I got to get out of this. I can't continue to behave like this. It's ridiculous and it's wrong. And I hate when I feel like this. And What he showed me was that when I was in junior high, I had a boyfriend, well, as much a boyfriend as you can have in junior high, and he had come over for dinner as well as some other people, and after dinner, my mom made me stay in and do the dishes, and he went with the other people, and we lived pretty near a lake, and there was a lot of cattails, and apparently they got in a big cattail fight, and somebody had pulled off all of the, like, the brown part of the cattail, which is like a bunch of feathery stuff, and shoved it in my boyfriend's mouth and throat, and he was choking, and it became very serious. It was really horrifying for him. And he shared this with me later, and I was so angry and hurt that if I wouldn't have had to stay and do the dishes, I could have been there. I could have stopped it from happening. I would have never let somebody shove cattails down somebody else's throat. And it really, when the Lord showed me, I was like, oh my gosh, honestly, this has nothing to do with, you know, the dishes, really. It had to do with the fact that I couldn't protect somebody because I was made to stay and do the dishes.
Wow, right? Like, your turn to do the dishes, boom, that doesn't make sense. It makes a whole lot of sense. Pretty cool stuff. So before we get down to the next number 11, I'd like to hear Deli talk to you a little bit more about, like, if you want to add something to this, about being able to sit with these emotions when we're triggered. You know, what are some of the things, how would you walk them through that, like with Kevin, starting with Kevin, when she says that, like, how would you process that with him?
So first of all, I would want to know, I haven't heard a whole lot of how you felt when that happened. I've heard what you thought. And what I heard from you was your thoughts about another person or your thoughts about the world, how your lens of the world.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting because your lens of the world was outward, mm-hmm. and it wasn't so much inward. It wasn't self-deprecating. It was attacking outward. And I wonder, you skipped right over the emotional piece of it, and I wonder what the emotions were underneath.
So I guess the emotional thing was my own feelings of inadequacy or being inadequate.
Mm-hmm. So when someone said maybe you could do that a little differently or gave you a suggestion, what immediately got triggered for you was a huge sense of inadequacy underneath.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Along with the inadequacy, does it come out as anger? Is that for you? Does it?
Yeah, I mean, it starts as anger.
The
underlying deal is like, you know, that I feel inadequate, mm-hmm. and I don't want to go there, so I mm-hmm. lash out at the other person.
So you feel the anger. Anger is a secondary
emotion.
So what we know when we feel anger is anger is just a tremendous emotion. I think it's amazing. And we hear a lot about anger management, which is great. We need anger management. But what I love is really understanding what anger is, because it's an indicator. And so anytime you feel anger, you don't want to just manage it. You want to go underneath of it and understand it. What's underneath the anger? Because it's secondary. It covers over another emotion. So it's telling you something. It's a huge opportunity for growth and understanding. If you just manage it and never understand it, you really don't get anywhere. So if we go underneath of that, you felt a huge sense of inadequacy, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And under that, was there a sense of fear? Did you feel any fear under there?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, criticism in general, I think, kind of I get a fear.
Fear of?
I'm not sure. But I think, you know, I think you're right. It's the anger that kind of covers up something else, but it's probably mm-hmm. fear or inadequacy mm-hmm. or something
Fear's
like that.
Fear's almost always underneath of those emotions down there. And so I don't know how fast we need to move here. Usually
yeah,
I would
keep going. Yeah, keep going. Yeah, okay, we're doing good.
But okay, normally I would slow way down, and so this feels weird to go real fast. So what I'm kind of hearing, I'll kind of hand you some answers. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm kind of hearing underneath of there this real sense of this fear of failure or this fear of not being enough.
Not being good enough.
Can you feel that fear under there?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, because. You know, that I don't want the criticism, you know, that kind of shows that I'm not enough.
Criticism automatically shows you're not enough, you somehow messed up.
Exactly.
So underneath of there, so when this comment comes in, what gets triggered way down deep is the fear, the inadequacy,
right.
And under that the fear. And we could probably flesh that out and put a whole lot of more emotions in there, I would think.
Right.
We could put a whole lot more in there. If we went down underneath of that fear, I'm guessing underneath that fear you have a deep longing.
Well.
Yeah, I think that's right.
What is the deep longing?
To matter, to know that I am enough, to know that I'm a good person or a competent person.
Absolutely. So to be enough, to be adequate, to be competent, and to be significant?
Yeah.
Right. So when a casual comment rolls in, if you weren't careful about your response, and if you weren't someone who cared about why you do what you do, you may just spout off and react in anger, and that's that. But because you really care about what's going on inside, you're going to slow that down. You're going to go, wow, I really felt inadequate inside. But if we slow that down underneath, that fear of inadequacy, that fear of being incompetent.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And underneath is that deep, deep longing to feel like you're significant, that you matter, that you are able to offer something of worth.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, right. So what happens then, and it happens with all of us, is what gets triggered way down underneath of everything is this deep longing. And ours all may be different. But we all have these really deep longings for acceptance or love or whatever it might be, security. And so deep underneath of that, your deep longing to be a person of significance and someone who matters got really threatened. So you come up, the fear's there, all the emotions of inadequacy. And if we're coming up the layers, I heard you say to yourself about the other person, basically, who do you think you are? This isn't your area.
Right.
I know what I'm doing. What was it you said to yourself about yourself?
I think down inside I was kind of criticizing myself, you know, oh, this person had to come along and tell me this.
Right. But what you said was, this is my area, I kind of know what I'm doing.
Right.
But I'm wondering what else was in there that you said to yourself about yourself.
I'm not sure.
And maybe nothing. Maybe your lens is all outward. I know what I'm doing. I got this together. You're the problem.
Well, I mean, I think clearly, you know, the fact that I overreact means the problem's in here. But I'm not exactly sure what's going on in my emotions to, you know, to figure that out or whatever.
Right. Right, and I'm moving really fast, so I wouldn't normally be doing this. But, you know, one of the things we do is we feel the deep emotions, and we say something to ourselves about the other person, about the world, or about ourselves. And so we say something like, you know, I don't deserve this, this isn't fair, you know, here we go again. Or we might say something like, I'll never be good enough, I'm just trash, I never have what it takes. Or we may be very self-deprecating here, or we may attack the other person. So we typically go one way or the other.
It's cool stuff.
Yeah.
You can go deep with this whole...
Yeah. Well, and then what you do after that is after you get the thoughts going on, the cognitions or narratives, and by the way, our narratives are often very wrong.
Yes.
So when we act on our narratives, if our narratives are not accurate, we're way off base with what's actually happened. So then you come up here and you have action. So what happens is people make a comment, all they see is the response. And so you're up here above... just looking at behavior, facial expressions, tones, measurable things, and all you're doing is staying right here. But you can go really deep with all of that.
Yes. So, as a person that's, you know, I really respect your journey, your story, all the work you've done. Like, I really think very highly of you, Kevin. So, the next step we would go with this would be, what would it take to clip these wires to where... the button's pushed, no response. Push. What would it take?
So, I mean, what so far is working for me, so in the past I would kind of put a lot of my trust or my emotions in what other people thought. So if a person thought bad things about me, or whatever, good things, you know, that was how I, you know, I had all these ups and downs. But connecting with God, it changes the whole ball game. Because now, okay, one person criticizes me, well, that's not the end of the world, because I'm connected to God. And that, to me, really shorts out that button in a big way. Because, okay, that's one person's opinion, I really need to connect with God, and that's what works for me. Now, I obviously don't get to all these underlying emotions that way, but it does at least short out the button.
So, basically, if this button gets pushed, and tell me if I'm wrong here, if when you were criticized, it ran into your worth as a person in Christ.
Right.
And you saw that in your narrative, in your image of yourself, like your ability to image, like all this work you're doing, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that okay, now it makes sense, because okay, so if I'm criticized, that impacted my feeling of worth. I felt I'm a worthless person, but now I can say, well, I don't get my worth from Glenna, I get my worth from God.
Right.
And that's a whole different ball game.
So, if I can ask you this, when my wife's saying to, and I think I'm the one that originally brought up the cords, when my wife's saying, hey, maybe we could, you know, bring these cords together, what would you most like to believe about yourself now when you see yourself in that situation? What would you most like to believe about you in that?
That I could see that and recognize that she's trying to be helpful and kind of try to make everything better. And so I'm a person of worth because somebody's taking the time to, you know, offer suggestions.
So ultimately, if you're standing on this foundation, which is a lot of work. I mean, he's describing to me that when he's criticized, it's not the response it used to be, but it's more like a dial, and now it's down about 7 or 8 notches, right, what it used
exactly.
to be. Exactly. What would that response have been, you know, years ago?
Like a couple of years ago, I would have either blown up or I would have just walked out of the room or whatever. I mean, it would have been way out of proportion
yes.
to reality.
And so now he's able to respond more out of a motive of love, because it's not about him anymore. It's about, let's do this really good and let's try to do it better, and we're all on the same team. We don't take it personal because we're not operating, you know, this direction. Like, we're loving people. That's pretty awesome, Kevin. So,
can I add to that?
Yeah.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but at the beginning, the emotions aren't what we're trying to change. It's the narrative and the behavior. And so, but you have to recognize the emotions, because if you don't go down there and look at the emotions underneath and understand where it's coming from, where the trigger's from history, if you don't understand the emotions, you're not going to really be able to change them. But those are just emotions. So what I heard you change, as soon as Stan started working with you, you didn't change the emotions. You started talking about a new narrative, and you replaced the lie with truth.
Exactly.
And then you started working on your behavior, and you didn't explode. You could do something different. But quite often when your buttons still get pushed, it can still hurt. It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt or trigger you. It means, oh my gosh, that triggered me. I know exactly where it triggered me to. I can deal with it now. I know what this emotion's about. Now I can change my narrative about me, and I can believe the truth about me and the truth about the world or the other person. And I can also manage myself and control my behavior. But that all takes place over a long period of time.
That's so
but again,
awesome.
We're not working on changing the emotions. Those are neither here nor there. But without understanding the emotions, you're not going to get too far.
And we have to be willing to feel them. Like they say,
you got to feel them.
Addiction
yeah.
is a disease of the emotions. What am I refusing to feel? Right? I mean, that's a huge one. Someone asked me that a long time ago. Stan, what are you refusing to feel? And I'm like, boredom, loneliness, a deep sense of worthlessness. So I'm going for the drugs. Now I'm going to get blasted this weekend. Why? Mm-hmm. I won't feel that. Like, I refuse to feel those feelings and resolve them, you know?
So does that make sense when I say we're not working on changing the emotion? But you've got to pay attention to them, because those emotions are your informants. And without listening to them, you really are kind of clueless. So you've got to pay attention. They'll take you back to the place. Then you work on the narrative. What lies am I believing about myself, about other people?
Yeah.
Or even sometimes they're not lies. Sometimes what people are saying, they do mean it.
Right.
But we don't give them the power then to control us in that way. But then we work on the behavior. So.
Right. I'm giving all my power away
yeah.
when I say you control my feelings and my responses, like, constantly. This gives us the power to love people.
But I think at the same time, we lie to ourselves when we say it didn't hurt or it doesn't matter or
correct.
I don't care. We do. We can care. And I tell my kids if they come home from school, I'm like, you know, a lot of times they'll, you know, well, so-and-so did this. And a lot of times people will be like, tell them it doesn't hurt or you don't care. Don't let them see you hurt. And I'm like, oh, let them see you hurt. It's okay. Let them say, or just say, that really hurt and it wasn't very nice and I'm going to go away now. But let people see you hurt. It's okay unless they're going to manipulate you and use you badly. But again, it's not the emotions, because those are your informants.
Super cool. All right, Marcy. Here we go. Where did we leave off? All right. So if we clip these wires, right, about doing the dishes, someone says, you're going to be trapped in here doing dishes. It's your turn to do the dishes. There's a barbecue going on outside the window. People you love are out there dancing around, and you're doing the dishes. You know, what would have to happen? What would have to be healed in you where these wires can be clipped when the trigger comes, right? Or like Deli said, you feel something, but you don't, it doesn't hijack you, right? You feel it, but it doesn't hijack you. That's more realistic, you know, push, right? What would have to be healed in you?
Well, I really like what you said earlier about a space, because in that space is when I recognize I have a choice. I have a choice to do the dishes right now, or a choice to voice and say, I would really like to not do these right now. You know, just, you know, somebody have a good reason why I have to do these now. I think they can wait till later. before I'd ever even felt like I had a voice. I had no gap at all. It was like, you are stuck here. You have no choice, no voice, nothing. This is where I'm at. And so I guess feeling like I have a gap of a choice really makes a huge difference for me.
In a sense, too, like, I don't know if you agree with this, Deli, but, you know, it almost is like, that's almost like a trauma that she experienced, where she was trapped and she was separated, and these bad things were happening out there. You know, I just wonder if you've ever done any work where you're there doing the dishes, the stuff's going on out there that you can't know or control, and you're sitting there doing the dishes, and you're able to sit still. And, you know, one of the things that we would do would be, on a scale of 1 to 10, how trapped and frustrated do you feel in that picture, like in the original image, when you would just act like a 2-year-old, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how trapped and frustrated and all those feelings would you feel?
I could push a 10.
A 10. Whoa, we're pushing 10 here at the underground. And so what we'd want to do is, and like Deli's saying, we're speeding this all up, but what we'd want to do is have her standing there doing the dishes. Maybe we'd put on some music. I got a CD here I use. And we invite the Lord's presence into that. Where is he at? Like, this is a form of theophostics. If you use that method, there's other methods. You're in the kitchen. All this stuff's going down. Where is he at in this scene? Is there anything you could tell us about where maybe you would see him in this picture?
Actually, I think that I'd probably see him outside, because he knew what was happening out there.
Okay.
And I could have been out there, and maybe I couldn't have stopped it anyways. Maybe it still would have happened.
What do you feel when you think about the fact that a trauma was going on outside, you were inside, you were not part of it? What was happening? What happens in you now when you think about that? What do you feel?
Kind of panicky.
Yeah. So if you were to slow it way down and go down in here, and the thing is, it wasn't happening while you were doing dishes. It happened later when you realized you were not out there.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I think it maybe started when I was doing the dishes, because I really wanted to go out with everybody else.
Oh, so you were already starting to amp up.
I was already getting, like, I really wanted to go, but my mom said, you can't go. You have to do the dishes first.
Right.
And then it was made then traumatic by that there was a trauma that happened to somebody that I cared about.
Right. So there was already heightened emotion there. Mm-hmm. You were already feeling left out. You were feeling not part of. Then a trauma happened, and you weren't present for that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And when you think about not being present for that, what do you feel?
I don't know. Give me some options.
Well, you said panicky.
Mm-hmm.
You said panicky. Yeah. And again, I don't know how long, Stan, you want me to go here, but where I would go with this if we were just in a session would be more of, what are you noticing in your body right now? What are you feeling? Mm-hmm. And if I had to guess, you're feeling it right up in here.
Look, my heart is racing. I can feel it right here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything in your throat?
Yeah. It just feels like it's very tight.
Yeah. Yeah. So we might be looking at something a little bit different than what Kevin's was, because this looks more like almost a PTSD thing, or it almost sounds like not so much survivor guilt, but more of a control thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I wasn't out there to control. Does it feel like that panicky, I've got to get out there, I've got to control everything and manage everything?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That feels right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Did you want to go?
Well, I don't think that you probably should go further here, because she's walking through it right now, kind of for the first time, I think.
Yeah, that we've talked about that, yeah.
Yeah, so I
true story.
Yeah.
So what I would do with this, you know, I don't have the same skill set that Deli has, but what I would go with this also would be to begin working with, like, looking down at yourself, seeing yourself doing dishes and all this is going on out there, what would you most like to believe about yourself right then, like right now? What do you want to believe about you standing there? Like, what statement would you like to most believe that would be true about you? About you.
Maybe that I was still accepted with the group, still part of the group, but that God still was taking care of the people when I couldn't be.
So acceptance?
Mm-hmm.
God's love, go ahead.
Is there any part of that that you want to say it wasn't my fault? If I would have been there, I could have prevented it?
No, I feel like if I was there, I could have prevented it.
You could have prevented mm-hmm. it, right. I'm sorry, that's what I meant to say. If I would have been there, I could have prevented it. I wasn't there. He could have died. I wasn't there to control it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there to step in and prevent it. I was doing the stupid dishes back at home, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So can you feel there's still a lot of live stuff right there?
There's
still a lot of live trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's this part of you that says, and I could imagine, Marcy, that this shows up across the board for you, is I have got to be present or manage or control. I can't be not present
mm-hmm.
because bad things might happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could imagine this shows mm-hmm. up in all kinds of areas, that this button gets pushed all the time. And your way of managing it
is being very present.
Being very present.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's no way to live. That wouldn't be fun to live that way. And that's mm-hmm. a form of insecurity, mm-hmm. which, what do we say here? Like, constantly, I'm like constantly saying... Mm-hmm. I'm just constantly saying this is always going to be the root.
Mm-hmm.
My worth being my sense of security, my sense of being accepted, loved, forgiven, my sense of being significant and adequate, that's my sense of personal worth. When this button is pushed, if it hits your worth in Christ, you as a beloved daughter, you know, you're going to be able to respond in a different way. This is the work I spend like 99% of my time on. Like, my personal time, in my own devotional life, my own walk with God, this is the big dog. If you can establish this, it's not connected to this world, you're going to be one bad dude or one bad girl. Mm-hmm. You're going to be able to bring it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the stuff. But there's a lot going on there that needs to be untied.
There's an awful lot, and it sounds like you live in high alert, like red alert all the time.
Vigilance
and always being aware.
In some situations, but not everything, because like at my work, I guess maybe because I have really competent people around me, which I would think that if at my work I wouldn't be able to leave and go on vacation and not even think about it. But I have no problem doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe less so with, like, my family mm-hmm. or people that I care about. Not that I really love and care about the people I work for and that work for me. I'm not, that, but it's different.
Right. Work is often very different than our personal mm-hmm. relationships. So in your personal relationships, that might be where it shows up the most.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and so maybe really understanding in that level of your worth, understanding, getting down there and being able to release that control mm-hmm. and recognizing your own limits in that.
Yeah.
But I would say, you could probably benefit mm-hmm. from doing more work around that.
And mm-hmm. on the other end of things too, you know, on a shallower end, much shallower end, but important, you know, when we have things that we're, like, I call them associations where... You know, when I used to see hypodermic needles, I used to just send me out the roof, or see things that looked like a crack pipe or little baggies or certain smells, certain kinds of people or cars, certain songs on the radio, certain utensils in the kitchen or in the bathroom or anywhere, I would just, you know, it would just send me through the roof because of the lifestyle I lived. It was very painful. And I know that like Dave and I, my sponsor back there, we did a lot of work on really simple things of when I would go into a public bathroom, guys, it would send me into this place of hypervigilance because that's where you make all your drug deals. Like for me, there was a lot of memories in bathrooms, deals, and I would use in bathrooms. And so it's really painful when I'm in a grocery store with my family and I have to go run off to the bathroom And I go in there, and I'm going through this weird experience where I just began, when I would see a baggie or a needle or a crack pipe type looking thing, that I would thank God for my sobriety. It became a response of thanking Him for my sobriety, celebrating my worth as a person, and then praying for the people out there still trapped in addiction. And it'd be a little warfare experience for me. And it began to turn into something really powerful for me, where those end up being a response of worship and warfare. And it was just wonderful. I wasn't forcing it. It's just something I started turning to. And kind of like Pavlov's dog, when you ring the bell, like the way to stop the saliva is when the bell rings, you know, no food, right? I mean, that's kind of how he fixed it. And in the same way with me, when the bell would ring, I would go into warfare and prayer and thanking God, gratitude, and bringing this new place in my life into that moment. Really painful stuff, but you can do it, especially in your imaging ability, you know, in settling these things. That's marvelous stuff. Do you have anything to add to some of those kinds of things as well? Like when you associate things with other things?
I think just the biggest thing is to recognize what your triggers are. And, you know, a lot of times I'll kind of process mine like while I'm driving. Like if I get angry about something, I'll spend some time, quite a bit of time actually kind of thinking, where in the world does this take me back to? How old do I feel? When have I felt this way before? And if I can just kind of go back and kind of, sometimes I'll think back, was it this? No. Was this? No. And I'll go back and then I'll hit it and I'll go, that's exactly where this triggered me to because it fits perfectly. So if you can just kind of spend some time just feeling it, where does it feel accurate to? Because like what Stan was saying in the beginning, you know, if a little tiny trigger happens at this big and your response is this big, you know it's not about the trigger.
Yeah.
It's about something else that triggered you. So spend some time just kind of de-escalate and sit and think and feel, and where does this take me back to? When have I felt it before? Whose voice is this? When have I heard this before? And I can usually track mine back pretty well to where it really, really fits. So just spend time doing a lot of self, you know, evaluation and trying to figure out your emotions. But again, emotions don't control us. They just inform us. That's all they're there for. But if we don't listen to them, we don't learn a thing. So we've got to listen to our emotions and understand what they're telling us. They're like the gauges on your dashboard. They don't do anything other than inform you. But if you ignore them, you know, you're in big trouble.
Oh, yeah. And so big picture is when I wake up in the morning, it's a good example. I do my Son of God time, put on my music. I see what I'm dressed. I see how loved I am. I see who I am in Christ. Like I see it, you know, in my head. I'm really after that stuff. And I charge it with emotion, with the music and with the way I pray and the way I'm seeing it. And I'm after these things. And you can take these things that where we're stuck to where when you do this work with this imaging and with the music and with the reframe, the new cognition, when I say when you see yourself doing the dishes, you know, where is that triggering you to? You'll actually get down to, you know, a one or a two. Wow. Where there's no more emotional charge that's pushing you around. That's some work. Very, very possible. Super possible. I like that.
I want to add one thing. I kind of did the same thing with the Lord walking me through that, like, because I knew that something was being triggered. And when he took me to that scene, I clearly need a lot, like, to go through a lot more stuff with it. But what I was able to do then was start praying. And so when I start to feel frustrated or whatever, I would just start praying either, like, for whoever, like, I would feel angry at, or just thank the Lord, oh, it was a great meal, you know, and I think, oh, I shouldn't have even eaten. I was like, no, that's not true. It was a really great meal, and it was really healthy, and you need to eat, and it's a good thing. And I would just start this running dialogue with the Lord of, you know, whatever was going on in my head and be thankful, and then started into warfare like you did too of, you know, like praying for other people and just situations. And so now when I do the dishes, I usually just pray.
Cool stuff. And one of the things too, I think I talked about this a few weeks ago, is sometimes I'll ask myself, you know, what is it that I need to hear from God right now? More than anything else. You know, I mean, forget the car that's triggering me or the song or the person or the street or whatever, what do I need to hear the most right now from God that's going to be a game changer? And then I let him tell me that. I let him do that and bring that to me. It's really powerful stuff. But a person has to do it, do the work, and then have people around them that know what it's like to do this work that can also agree with you and see those things with you. Really important to bring other people in that see those things. You know, huge big deal. So you guys want to close out with any kind of closing comments?
I just wanted to say, we went a little different route with you, so I didn't kind of go down in those levels like we did with Kevin, but you might do a little bit of work around the fear, because a lot of times anger is a cover-up for fear, you know, so you might look a little deeper as far as what the fear is under there, that fear of somebody's going to get hurt, or I'm not in control, or nobody's in control. So going down there a little bit deeper and looking at what the fear is, because that'll often come out as anger. So, and the only other piece I would add to that is, if you're dealing with a button and it's actually like severe trauma, PTSD stuff, definitely do go through all this stuff. But you may also, you may be more stuck than you realize. So you can understand why you're triggered, where you're going. You know, with my history, I can understand all kinds of reasons why I do what I do. I can get the emotion. I can name them. Yeah. I can talk about the fear. I can talk about everything. That doesn't mean I can get past it. So a lot of times trauma is simply you're stuck. So if you're really, really stuck and you can't move past it, you know, get some help. Get somebody to help you move past that. And if that works here, fantastic. But don't think just because you understand something that you can get past it, because
so
you're
cool.
Very, very stuck in it.
Guys, we have a powerful fall and winter season coming ahead of us. We're going to do some really wonderful stuff here. So I hope you guys spread the word and come hang out with us and go through these sessions with us. Hey, let's give them a hand here.